This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 166 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and with me on the line via Skype from Melbourne, Mr. Shelton Muller. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, Bruce. How you doing, mate?
Excellent. So you're all vibed and ready to head off stateside?
Pretty much, yeah. Another trip back to the United States to run a few more workshops and hang out with some photographers and have a good time. I'm really looking forward to it. Absolutely looking forward to it.
Awesome.
We're heading to LA first, so we'll be there over the weekend that's coming, and probably there by the time you're listening to this podcast out there in podcast land. So if you are in LA and you're listening, we might still be there. If not, meet us in New York, because we're going to fly from LA to New York, where Glenn and I have absolutely nothing to do. We have no obligations.
Wow.
It's just that we thought, hey, what's the point of doing all this if we can't spend a few days having fun in New York? So we'll do a bit of street photography, and we'll check out the sights. I've never been to New York, so I'll be like a kid in a candy store. We're going to go to B&H Photo, of course. You have to do that when you're in New York.
Yep.
And from there, we fly down to Allentown. Yes,
yep.
The Allentown of Billy Joel fame. And when you go target practice shooting in Allentown, they have big pictures of Billy Joel, apparently. Only kidding, Bruce. we're going to that Allentown. And for Dan's Cameras, we are running a few workshops there as well. So,
awesome.
And we just basically fly home. So all up, we're about 12 days, I think, doing a quick tour of the United States.
Fantastic.
Very quick.
Now, I happen to know that we have at least one listener in that neck of the woods who's a bit of a lurker. He hasn't actually ever emailed us or participated in any conversation, but I do some work for him.
Oh.
So, Farrell Kramer, I'm talking about you. So I'm going to drop Farrell an email and let him know that you guys are coming to town, and maybe he can hook up with you and show you the sights.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Now, which part of the world are we talking?
New York.
New York?
Yeah.
Right. New York.
Yeah.
Okay.
I will get in touch with Farrell because I'm assuming he still listens, but he may not. I don't know. So
now
I'm going to drop him an email.
You said he's a bit of a lurker. Does that mean he's like psychopathic or a stalker or something like that?
I don't think so.
Oh,
I just meant a lurker in the sense that he hasn't emailed us to, you know, engage in conversation via the podcast or anything like that. So he listened to all three of the podcasts that I was doing in building the pod and sign language as well as Shutters Inc. So he's
more a Bruce Williams fan really than a, you know.
Well, the thing is, he's like me. He does audio as well as photography.
Aha.
And so hence why we got communicating with each other, and I do a little bit of work for Farrell. I'll drop him an email and let him know that you're headed his way and that he should come and be your tour guide.
Well, we would love to catch up. Absolutely.
Cool.
That would be fantastic. And if you are in New York, LA, or Allentown, we are coming. And just let us know that you want to hook up, meet with us, and, you know, do a shoot with us or come to a workshop or anything. We'd love to catch up with you. Absolutely. I mean, Glenn and I, we enjoy each other's company, but, you know, nice to have other people to hang out with. But we are
actually locals when you're in a strange town.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, because you just never know what opportunities are around a corner that you might not otherwise poke your head down, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So we'd love to. We'd love to, you know, meet up with anybody that is wanting to hang around with us for some reason.
So obviously, if you're not already a friend with Shelton on Facebook or with CPW on Facebook, you should hurry up and become one so that you can hook up with the guys while they're in the States.
Keep a track of our movements and know where we are and when. We got a few dinner appointments where, of course, we're going to be having dinner once again with the lovely Erin Manning. She's always a load of fun and always gets out the karaoke when we're there, which Glenn hates, but, you know, I love. Those are the dynamics of our relationship. We're going to be having dinner with Mark Common at Paul's Photo in Torrance. We were hoping to have dinner with Claudia and Dave Honnell, Claudia Christian and Dave Honnell, but they're in London.
Oh, okay.
But so we won't be doing that, but I'm sure that we'll have a few different invitations while we're hopefully in New York and in Allentown as well.
Now, while we're talking about Dave Honnell,
yeah,
we should probably mention, for those who haven't been following the CPW website or CPW on Facebook, that you guys have just locked in Dave Honnell for a flash workshop in Melbourne.
Yes, we have. On October the 13th, we're going to be doing a sort of a specialized flash photography workshop in which Dave Honnell will, you know, talk about lighting modifiers, using, you know, strobes creatively. I mean, he is the guy who invented the gear, and anyone who invents the gear knows how to use the gear and why it's needed. So we're looking forward to having Dave along. It's a one-only thing. Get in quick. Because it'll be a really cool workshop, and we are going to really make that thing rock. So, awesome. If you want to go to creativephotoworkshops.com.au and register there, or just, you know, send us a message and let us know that you want to you're at Creative Photo Workshops fan site on Facebook, we'll definitely get you a place if you manage to get in on time. And as you know, Bruce, there's always a place for you, mate.
Thank you, matey. I am seriously considering making the trip down for that one, even though it is midweek. I think I might just fly down on the Tuesday night, hang out on the Wednesday, and then, you know, either catch a late night flight back Wednesday night or catch an early morning flight back Thursday morning.
We'll take good care of you. Or you might just get really, really sick on Thursday.
And Friday.
And then, oh, look, gee, a weekend. What am I going to do?
I've
got to hang out with the boys at their wedding, their flash workshop or whatever we're running on the following weekend. Oh, darn it, you know. See what you can do, mate. It'd be good to have you down. But if you are in Melbourne or Sydney or anywhere else and you want to come and meet David Honnell, who is the inventor of all the Honnell lighting equipment and a man who has photographed some of the greatest faces in our time, Michael Jackson, Prince, Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis. He's been through war zones in the Middle East.
Barbra
Streisand, yeah. He's a very unassuming man. He doesn't have any tickets on himself or anything like that. He's a lovely guy. And, we're going to have a really great day. And, you know, if you're off at the science, his wife, Claudia Christian, of course, she was in Babylon 5.
Mm-hmm.
And she's apparently attending a sci-fi convention here. And so we're just making use of the time while David's here to run a workshop with him. So if you want to meet Claudia Christian as well, she'll be down at the sci-fi convention.
Fantastic.
Or we might even get her into model for us. I don't know. You know, depends on whether she's free or not. Now, I'm not saying
that,
anything.
That would
not
be a coup.
Any promises.
That would
not
be a coup. Hey, listen, we got an email through the week from the fishy-smelling Mark Loader from Perth.
Yes. Gosh,
you kind of have to read the email to get the gag. But he said, "Hi, guys, haven't written for a while, collective sigh of relief in brackets, and I now have something to run past you, mainly the attached photo, which I will put a link to in the show notes. I put this on my Flickr site, Random Ranford Stealth, that's obviously his Flickr name, last Monday night, and it has gone viral / ballistic / off like a bag of prawns in the sun. At this point, I would like to add that this email hasn't been sent to say, hey, dig me, but really just to ask why. Previously, the most views I received was just over 100 for 2 pictures. The attached photo has opened the floodgates to my site, and most pics have 100 views and some considerably more, and all because of the enclosed photo, which has received over 2,500 views. No, I can't believe it either. So my question, gentlemen, is simply why? What is it about this image that people have responded to? Is it that much better than the others? And have you guys had a similar experience? Shelton, you've often said that we should learn from our successes, so I need to understand what I've done here. Your collective opinions are both welcome and necessary, and I await your responses with fishy breath. Regards, Confused of Perth, formerly Mark Loader."
Now, I understand everything in that email except the fishy breath part.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he lives down near Fremantle Wharf. I don't know.
All right. Well, Mark, you're going to have to get back to us on that one. But I did understand the rest of it. Do you want me to read my response, Bruce?
Yeah, by all means.
Okay. I said, hey, Mark. Well, it's a simply beautiful image. That's why, smiley face, you have. And then, you see, what I do next is basically, I suppose, support my viewpoint that photographs or that photographers grow from their successes and not from more so than their mistakes. Of course, we do learn from our mistakes, but I think we grow more from our understanding our successes. When we disassemble a photograph, and we talk about this all the time in our workshops, if you really want to take photographs like the ones you aspire to take, the work of other photographers, your mentors, those who inspire you, you have to look at their photographs for quite some time, and you have to disassemble them, you know, bit by bit. What lens was used? What focal length? What f-stop? Where is the light coming from? Are there multiple light sources or just one? How is that light being used? What kind of light is it? I mean, just disassemble everything, the composition, the nature of the light, the placement within the, you know, frame, the aspect ratio, everything about it, disassemble. And then when you put it back together, as you critique it in your head and you come to understand that photograph, you are learning how that photograph came together, and you can then go and replicate it according to your own style. That's why I believe we learn from our successes. We look at a photograph and we say, ooh, I did that and it worked. I will have to do that again. And the more times you do that for different reasons, the more tools you have in your toolkit to use when you're taking photographs. So in my response to Mark, I've just said, hey, okay, well, you have A, posed her for the light. Now, I believe in that, you know, the light is your boss, and you don't pose your model just how you want them. They must pose for the light in a way that the light complements them rather than, you know, just because that's where you happen to be standing and you want the model or the subject to look at you. The light is your boss, and you have to work with that. So I've said, Mark, you've posed her for the light. The light on her face is beautifully placed to reveal the structure of her face. The highlights and shadows simulate Rembrandt lighting in a studio. And that's very important. So she's actually been told to move her face up into a position whereby the light pours across her face, gives you beautiful highlight and shadow, and, you know, she could be looking anywhere else and it would not work. But because her face has been lifted up toward that light, it's just beautiful. Then I say, well, you've placed her face in the intersecting thirds position. That's very strong composition. Well done. In other words, where the vertical and the horizontal third on the left, you know, part of the frame meet, that's where he's placed her face. So naturally, for some innate reason, we love this position and we love this kind of composition. It works. So he's done that. You have given her a non-distracting negative space and looking room. There's nothing else in the negative space, and there's a fair bit of negative space there, but it's not actually negative. It's just space, it's looking room. And it's non-distracting. There's no, you know, complexities. It's just looks like a sort of a facade of a building or something behind her. And she's got looking room. Now, there's two ways of working with looking room. Either you give your subject plenty of looking room, which you would do by composing the way Mark has and allowing two-thirds of the frame for her to look into, or you give your subject absolutely no looking room at all and leave two-thirds of the frame behind them. Now, that creates a little bit of visual tension and a little bit of curiosity. You know, what's outside the frame that this subject is looking at? So he's done that very well. He's minimized the depth of field, and so she stands out. And also, you've made her wear a strong color. Red, right? Red is always eye-catching. It is a color that if you use it, it will always catch the eye. And it highlights her from the out-of-focus background. It's not patterned. It's not dotted. It's not striped. It hasn't got lots of, you know, distracting texture, folds. It is just a straight red top. And so those things have all come together. There's probably quite a few other things if I really pulled it apart. But those were the things that, you know, hit me the most. as the reasons for its success. The only thing that I didn't think of in terms of why it might have been hit so many times is the tagging. I don't know what he tagged the image as being. It might have used a word, you know, that people are looking for. It might have been the model number of the camera or something like that. So that could be some of the reason. So tagging in photographs is, you know, very, very powerful stuff. So that might have been. I only had one thought about Mark's photograph that wasn't that was a criticism or a critique, you might say.
Yeah.
And I said, look, it's a lovely image, Mark. My only one suggestion is to be careful where you choose to amputate limbs. Either make it look very deliberate or don't do it at all. To cut her arms off at the wrists, which he's done, looks more like an oversight than deliberate composition. You know, it's just at the wrist. What, you couldn't give her another 8 inches of hand space, you know, to sort of, you're going to cut it off, in my opinion, cut it off, you know, somewhere much more deliberately, you know, between the shoulder and the elbow, or between the elbow and the hand, you know, or you know, at the you know, somewhere more deliberate. But to cut it off just at the wrist seemed like an oops rather than a deliberate act of composition.
Can I play devil's advocate here?
Yeah.
I haven't spoken to Mark, so I don't know this for a fact, but it's possible that maybe he has cropped this from a slightly wider shot, and maybe he was very conscious of wanting to get her face at the intersection of the two thirds. And maybe that is what forced the crop to be where it is in terms of her hands.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a thought.
Well, he responded to me.
Oh, okay.
He did. He said, "Hi, Shelton. Thanks so much for the prompt reply. That rotten mongrel Bruce doesn't give a damn about my photographs or anything I do. And this will be the last podcast of his I'll ever listen to. Should you decide to do a podcast on your own, I will gladly listen. But seeing as Bruce has no time for me, this will be the last episode of Shutters Inc. that I will be listening to." Then he goes on. No, I'm only kidding. He didn't say that at all. He said, "Hi, Shelton. Thanks so much for the prompt reply. It has really helped, and I'll take on board all you've said. Minor confession, this was a borderline grab shot. The other snappers that day, it was a workshop, were putting on hot shoe triggers, and I thought I'd just take some available light shots, as I usually do at this time. This meant the time pressures were off, as no one else was ready, so I guess I was more relaxed. Sadly, that also translates into slackness, hence the hand cutoffs, which recurs in other pics as well. This is one time when I need to learn from my mistakes. Again, thank you, and I'll leave with another confession. Being 53 and learning something I love and doing it with people I love, our model, my friends and mentors, Rob and Brett, is really cool. Really, really cool. Regards, starting to get it, of Perth, formerly Mark Loader. P.S. I hope Bruce liked it. Remember, you two are an important part of all of this.
Aww. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Mark. But we've got the picture up on, we'll put the picture up on the Shutters Inc. podcast site.
Yep. Well, I'll put a link to it anyway.
Yep. And check it out, people, and you'll see what we mean. It's a lovely photograph, but the process that Mark is talking about and the that we've mentioned several times on this podcast about learning from your successes is one that I wholeheartedly support and wholeheartedly advocate, because I believe that it is the best way to learn. Disassemble photographs that you like from other photographers. Disassemble those that succeed and excite you from your own work, and then put them back together, and you will learn in leaps and bounds. You really will. You will take leaps ahead in your photographs very, very quickly. If all you're doing is looking at, you know, the mistakes that you make, you will always just be, I'm never good enough. It's not good for the psyche at all.
No.
To look at your photographs and never be happy. You can't do that. We've talked about this a bunch. I'm not going to talk about it anymore, but don't do that. That's all I'm going to say.
Fair enough. I think almost any any, well, not, I was going to say any creative endeavor, but it's not only a creative endeavors. I mean, you know, how many sports people do you hear who say, you know, it's as much a mental game as it is a physical game?
Yeah.
You know, when they talk about their achievements on the sporting field, you know, it's as much as, you know, your internal dialogue is just as important as what you do with your body, or, you know, in this case, what you do with a camera.
Yeah. And I think it can be part of our attempts to be humble. And I have no problem with humility, you know, for those who want it. Humility is good for all the lesser people of this world. I don't need it, you know, because, you know, quite frankly, it gets in my way. But for lesser people, you know, humility is a good thing. No, but I mean, you know, we can think that if we're excited about our photograph, if we've done a good job, particularly in the Australian mindset, you know, we don't go telling everybody about it. Oh, aren't I great? But you have to actually, to some degree, be excited about your work, because if you're not, then what's the point of doing it?
Yep.
There is absolutely no point being a photographer who loves photography if you never get excited about an image you take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have to. And it's not about being egomaniacal. It's not. It's you're creative and you have to honor yourself in that process. So it is, as you said, it is much a mental game. In this case, you know, mental and emotional reassurance about self-validation and you know, self-proclamation, as it were, of your worth as an artist. I come across so many people in the, you know, in my workshops who, well, they've come up to me, as we were saying last week, and they've taken a beautiful photograph, but all they're worried about is some tiny little aspect of it that some judge in a camera club or someone else told them is wrong. It may or may not be wrong, but hey, it's so small and insignificant. Have a look at the great photograph you just took. You know, you look at the greatest works of art ever, and you will find a fault. You will find something in them that... Just, you know, I think, for instance, La Gioconda, the Mona Lisa, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the backdrop.
Right.
I don't like the backdrop. I think it's a distracting backdrop. And yet one of the greatest... Yeah,
too much depth of field. What was he thinking?
Exactly. 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 My point exactly. Too much depth of field. He did not paint that with an 85mm 1.8. Let me tell you that much. Yeah. And some of the greatest pieces of music is always something you could say, and I'm sure, and you hear many musicians talk about, oh, look, we love that album. We had to sort of compromise on this or compromise on that. And I'm sure every time they listen to it, they go, oh, you know, if you've ever worked with actors or photographed a performance, and I've photographed many performances, you will, and you're talking to the performers afterwards, they'll always say, oh, I mucked up that second line in that song. And everyone around them will say, did you? I didn't hear. Oh, I mucked up the lead break on such and such. Did you? I didn't hear. You know, because you're so critical about your own work. You have this expectation. And all you hear is the note that you fluffed in the second bar. Mm. You know? But no one else heard it. Or let's put it this way. They didn't give a damn. You know? They didn't care. The rest was so awesome that it just got lost in this... you know, in the excitement of how awesome the rest of it was.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think learn from our successes is a definite, definite way. And don't think that it's egotistical to say that you have successes. We all have successes.
Definitely.
You know? And the more you learn from them, the more successful you'll be.
Yep.
Mm.
Okay, we have one more email, which did come in a few weeks ago. And my apologies for taking a while to get to this. This was from Rob Stymers. And he had a couple of things to say, and then he had something on the water skier conundrum. So I'll read the whole lot. Hi, guys. First, let me start by saying great podcast. I've been with you since very close to the beginning and have stopped listening to all other photo-related podcasts that I was when I first got my iPod. There have been numerous occasions where I've thought about donating my 2 cents, but this is the first time. I'm a Nikon shooter, and thanks to Shelton, I can remember buying a 50mm 1.8 after a podcast a long while ago in which he said he has students try seeing the world through a prime 50. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I've recently purchased the Tamron 28-75 2.8 on Shelton's endorsement, and everyone else who has ever used it, and I'm trying to do it justice. Next on my list is a solid tripod and some used flashes along with some remote triggers for off-camera flash experimenting. I work for a software company in Canada, and we have a few camera enthusiasts, all of which shoot Nikon, except one who shoots Canon, but we let him play with us anyway. I've turned the others onto the podcast, and we all water cooler the shows each week. We are beginners and amateurs at best, but have some decent understanding of what we are doing. To the water skiing question, as a photo enthusiast and former competitive skier, I would like to add my input. The problem with running chase boats, as Shelton suggests, is not only a potential safety issue, but it would be hard to get an inside boat in position to light the face of the skier because it would be in frame and the tow rope would be in the way. Also, most of these photos feature glass, calm water, and the lighting boats would have to be in front of the skier, meaning their wake would ruin the picture. Shelton, your solution is good, just the application that needs adjusting, as these shots are usually achieved at an optimal moment as the skier apexes around a buoy in the ski course. The exact location of the shot should be predictable. Even if not using a course, the spot could be identified. I think the off-camera flash heads could be set on floating rafts close enough to have the power while far enough away to be out of frame. In fact, they could be in line with the lens as you'd be shooting over them and in tight enough to keep them hidden. The nice thing is that you could really achieve any angle of light from this vantage point. You could even bounce the light up into the skier off the water, creating a textured effect. Well, if you got to this point in the email, you've waded through my ramblings, and I thank you for your time. Keep up the great work, both of you, in bringing us a quality podcast. Rob Stymers. Well, thank you, Rob. Thoughts?
Excellent. It makes sense to me. I have never water skied in my life, and I've never photographed a water skier in my life.
No.
So I was just taking a rough punt, and it's, you know, nice of him to validate my attempts at correcting that situation, but clearly his idea is one based on experience and one that sounds like, hey, it would work.
Yeah.
So by all means, you know, if that's where, works, do that. That's for sure. Just well, getting back to.
I think we've given Jim plenty of options on ways to tackle this shoot anyway.
Yeah, he'll never email us again, you know. Boy, let it go already. The shot's done, you know. But no, we're here to solve your problems, folks. That's what we do here at Shutters, Inc. Here to give you reasons to keep on shooting. Getting back to his comment about the 50mm 1.8.
Yep.
I would, when we were doing Miawana Shoot-A-Lotta, our New Zealand expedition, Mike Holman there took a group outside. And he gave them the 50-50 challenge.
Yes.
They had to take 50 photographs in 50 minutes with a 50mm lens. And, and just walk around. And that was the challenge. And they loved it. They absolutely loved it. So a 50mm lens is not a particular focal length that you can do much with. It's fairly, if you're working with a camera that has a 35mm size sensor, you notice I didn't use the expression full frame.
Full frame, no.
but if you're working with a camera that has a 35mm size sensor, then a 50mm has a fairly, you know, chicken parmigiana stock standard kind of look to it, you know?
Yeah.
But it does have a, the ability to have minimized depth of field. It does see as you see in terms of compression and perspective. So it's a very interesting challenge. And if you've got a 50mm and you're out there listening, do the 50-50 challenge with a few of your friends. If you run a camera club, set it as an assignment. The 50-50 challenge, 50 well,
we,
photographs.
We did in this. 50 minutes. Yeah, we did this as our meetup number 7 a couple of months ago.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. How did it go?
Great. It was actually a lot more challenging than I thought.
Yes.
Because you're walking around and you don't just want to snap anything. You're trying to look for creative ways to shoot. And it's actually a lot harder than you think to come up with 50 images in a, you know, tightly defined, you know, time limit of 50 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I I will confess that some of my shots, I mean, I didn't even get 50. I think I got 42. And wow. I know I was guilty a couple of times of just snapping a couple of things because I thought, you know, it's been, you know, 3 or 4 minutes since I took a shot. And I need to keep clicking, you know. It's challenging. It really is.
It forces you to see, you know, and see with what you've got, you know. And it's a good challenge. I've never done it. I wasn't part of that challenge in New Zealand, but I might give it a go. I think it's a great idea. And that Tamron 28-75 that he's buying, the 2.8, is actually a very, very good lens. If you are looking for, you know, I mean, there's the Nikon 24-72-8 is a legendary lens, and the Canon equivalent, also a legendary lens, but they are very expensive. Because Creative Photo Workshops are supported by Tamron, we like the idea that we take Tamron lenses to our workshops. And what they do is they give people a sigh of relief that you don't, that even third-party lenses can give and provide excellent quality images. Yeah. And I know, having worked with the Tamron 28-75 2.8, it is an excellent lens. It's incredibly sharp and, wonderful value for money, especially when compared to its, you know, name brand counterparts. As a third-party lens, it is really quite wonderful. So, you know, you'll do well with that lens, mate. You go and buy that thing and enjoy it. I've enjoyed mine, and I work with it all the time. I've shot, if I do a wedding, I'll have a 28-75 2.8 on one camera and my 85 1.8 on the other, and I shoot 90% of my wedding with those two lenses. And the rest is, you know, whatever I might need, my 14 mil or my 70-200 or whatever it is that I might require for a particular shot I see. But those two lenses, you know, will work with me well. And that one is particularly good.
So do you shoot with just two bodies at a wedding, or do you have a third body with those that you flick those other lenses around on, or?
Oh, no, I'll carry two bodies, and then I'll swap between them, you know, with, like, if I need to take a photograph with the 85, I'll take a photograph with that camera, or I might swap it over, because one is an APS-C size sensor, and the other one is a 35mm size sensor.
Yeah, no, my point was, for the other 10% of the shots where you're not using one of those two lenses, do you change lenses on one of those two camera bodies, or do you have a third body?
No, I don't have a third body, but I do have a third body, but my son stole it. I don't know. I'll have to, you know, hit him up to get it back. But then again, what will he do for a second body? He's only got one.
Good luck with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But I've never needed more than two bodies. But I will. If I require a lens for a particular photograph, then I'm thinking outside my usual square anyway, and so I will take a few minutes to set that photograph up, which would mean getting, you know, going to my Low Pro Roller 100. Did you hear that product placement there? That was good, wasn't it? I'll go down to my Low Pro Roller 100.
John, I love you for that.
Yeah, oh yeah. I love that thing. And I'll open it up and I'll get the lens out and we'll set that photograph up. And I'll spend, you know, quite a few minutes perhaps doing that photograph.
Right.
Whereas the other lenses are pretty much as I see, you know, I've got 28-75 for most things that happen and the 85 for specific portraits and available light shots. So, you know, those two lenses are my sort of stock standard, carry me through a wedding. But the others will be, no, I'm going to set this up and we're going to do it with a 14 mil or a 20 mil or a 200 mil. And I have good, obvious reasons for choosing that particular perspective or focal length. But I don't use a third body because, I don't know what lens I'm going to use till I see the image in my head.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a very important part of the process. We talk a lot at our workshops about choosing the lens. The other day, we were talking about this, and one of the ladies at the workshop said to me, "Well, how do I know what lens is the right lens?" you know, I was saying, you know, don't take the shot unless you've got the right lens on your camera first. And she sort of looked at me and said, "Well, I don't know what lens I would use." And I said, "Well, you've really got to see the shot in your head." and see, is that a wide angle shot? Am I getting in close with a really wide angle, or am I getting far back with a long lens? How am I seeing this shot?
That's one of those things that just comes with experience.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the danger with just settling for the lens that's on your camera at the time.
Yeah.
I don't ever do that. I will never settle for the lens that's on my camera at the time if it happens to be the wrong lens. If that's not the lens that I've seen the photograph with, then it's not the lens I will use.
Yeah.
And I don't care how far away my gadget bag is, I will, you know, I will send my assistant off to get me that lens.
Yes. Exactly.
Well, they're younger than me usually, so, you know. But no, honestly, we do have a term in our workshops where we publicly humiliate people who come along who are lens lazy.
Yeah.
You know, I'll say to the group, okay, run in and get your wide-angle lens for this shot. We're going to set up a shot. And then and then I'll see them taking the shot from like a mile away with a 70 to 200. And I'll say, what the heck are you doing? You know, this is a wide-angle shot. Oh, it's in the room. I can't. And so, they cop it being lens lazy. But lens laziness is one of the greatest, you know, destroyers of a good photograph.
Right.
That image, the image that you see in your head has a perspective, and that perspective relates to a focal length.
Yeah.
So see that image clearly in your head and then go and get the lens that matches. Yes, you're right, it's experience, but you will only learn or gain that experience by not being lens lazy.
Hmm.
So, you know, put your lens on, have a look at it, and you know, get used to seeing the way lenses see. If you only ever stick to one little zoom lens on your camera and you just happen to stand there and zoom in and zoom out just because that's, you know, how you compose, then you'll never learn the value of correct perspective or how that perspective can enhance a photograph. You know, you can take a 10mm wide-angle lens and you can make the most ordinary thing look absolutely awesome by getting 2 feet away from it and taking its picture with a really wide-angle lens, you know.
So when you were getting started all those years and years and years ago...
Oh, millions.
Did you... You know, like obviously there would have been a time when you didn't have a huge plethora of lenses to choose from, right?
Mm-hmm. Do you know what a plethora is?
I was waiting for that.
Sorry, go on.
Did you find as you acquired new lenses that were, you know, particularly different from the other lenses that you'd had up until that point, that you fell in love with those lenses and you intended to use those lenses a lot? And then eventually sort of gravitated back to a broad range of everything?
I think you will naturally fall in love with something when you buy it and tend to use it a little bit for a little while and then balance out.
Yeah.
I don't know that I... Sorry, go on.
Well, yeah, that was exactly my point, was because, you know, I picked up this 20mm wide angle earlier this year off eBay, and I've just absolutely fallen in love with that lens.
As
and,
you should.
And, man, I seem to use that. You know, I would go so far, I haven't actually looked at my metadata, but I'd take a punt and say I use that, you know, for 75 to 80% of my shots now. Because I just love the way it sees the world.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you get in close to something and it just makes your subjects just big and booming there in one side of the image, and you've got all this great spread out into the background across the rest of the image. I just love that.
And but it's powerful. I mean, look at the photographs you did of that old truck, right? They were with the 20mm, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, now they work. It's an old truck,
yeah,
right?
I know.
but if you'd photographed it with a 50mm lens, it wouldn't work.
Would not have worked, no, absolutely.
You know? So you've got in close with a 20mm. Now you've got a 35mm size sensor.
Yep.
So the 20mm is pretty darn wide.
Yes.
And it just gives you this whole perspective on the world that is not possible with a human eye. Mm. So naturally, it gathers your attention.
Yeah. So this was my point. It was like, you know, do you think I'm going to grow out of that, like when I get some other great lens?
No.
Or do you think
no.
I'm just always going to love that lens?
You're always going to love that lens. My good friend Ian Rolfe is a landscape photographer.
Right.
And you've met Ian, haven't you?
I think I have. I think...
Yeah. Ian Rolfe. Anyway. He's a good friend of mine. Excellent landscape photographer. Taught me a lot, you know, many years ago about shooting landscapes and seeing light on the land.
Yeah.
And his favorite lens has been, as long as I've known him, and he has gone from, you know, shooting 35mm Nikon camera, film camera, to shooting 35mm size sensor Nikon digital camera, he still uses the same 20mm lens that he did all those years ago, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
So he hasn't grown out of it because it's the way he sees.
Hmm.
Now, I'll never grow out of my 85.
Yeah.
Never. I love that lens. And the for you, I imagine the 20mm lens is like we've often discussed. It's like that old pair of slippers that you just come into and go, there we are. And I'm the same with an 85.
Yeah.
So I don't think you'll ever grow out of it. But, you know, you probably initially went and photographed everything with it, whereas you'll balance out and say, well, actually, no, as much as I love my 20mm, this is not a 20mm photograph. It's a 35 or a 70 or an 80 or whatever, or 200. And so you will balance out where, and so you could be, I suppose, accused of being lens lazy if you didn't sort of say, no, hang on, you know, this isn't, as much as I love this lens, it's not the lens for me. I have to do that with my 85. I carry that thing everywhere. It goes with me everywhere. But there are times when I say, oh, no, this is a different lens.
Yeah.
So lens laziness is where we just, you know, we just say, oh, no, I can't be bothered. I'll just stand here and zoom in and zoom out and, you know, just get what I can. That will ruin all the potential that your photograph has. Put the right lens on. See it with the lens in your head. Go and get the darn thing. Stick it on your camera and shoot with it.
Yeah.
You know? I see a lot of photographers walking around shooting weddings with a 24-70 on one camera and a 70-200 on the other. Now, they've got 2.8 all the way through, and they've got every focal length covered from 24-200. That is fantastic. Don't get me wrong. Provided that they don't stand and just zoom in and out from where they happen to be. If they need 24, they zoom it to 24, and they physically walk in to the point where the 24 starts to work according to their vision. They don't just zoom into 32 or 29 or whatever.
Yeah,
it's the same with the 70-200. If they need 200 because they want that compression and that minimal depth of field, they put it on 200 and they physically walk back. They don't set it on 113 because that's where they happen to be standing at the time. It won't work.
Yeah.
You know? So that's what I call lens laziness. And see it in your head and make it happen. And if you do have to zoom out to 200 and physically remove yourself more from the subject, do it, but it will make the image work, you know? Mm. And you need to learn to see that way, and then you need to learn to, well, follow through that way.
Yeah. Mm. All right, matey, thank you once again. And you enjoy your, what is it, 3 weeks in the States?
12. No, it's only about 12 days. We were planning a much bigger tour. We were invited to go to Alaska, Fairbanks, Alaska.
Oh, wow.
We were invited to do Banff, and we were invited to do some workshops in New Orleans. But there are just things happening in our lives, and, you know, we have a business here to run in Australia that prevented us from being away for, well, it would have been at least a month.
Yeah.
So we'll probably catch up on those towns next year sometime, maybe May or something like that next year. And we will do those towns. So if you are in Banff, Fairbanks, or New Orleans, don't worry, we will be coming.
Awesome. Mm. Well, mate, enjoy your trip.
Thanks, buddy.
And we will catch up with you when you get back.
I'm looking forward to it. Keep in touch with us on Facebook, everybody, and keep an eye out for our travels. Keep an eye out on our blog, my blog, and, of course, the creativephotoworkshops.com.au website and our CPW fan page, because we'll try to keep you up to date with what we're doing. We're going to have a good time and going to take some photographs. We're looking forward to all the fun we're going to have. And, of course, we'll tell you all about it when I come back and we do the next podcast. Now, are you going to be keeping up the podcast while I'm away by, you know, sleeping with other people?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah? So who you got?
I haven't got anyone lined up yet, but I'll organize something.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, no problem. Yeah, one more, you know, nail in the coffin of my insecurity. All right.
Mate, there's always a place behind the mic for you here, mate.
Appreciate it.
All right, mate. Well, enjoy your trip, and I'll talk to you when you get back.
Yeah, you bet. Will do, mate. See you soon.
See ya. And just one thing that I want to add before I sign off is that I'm slowly getting my act together with regards social media marketing. And I've set up, well, I actually set it up a while back, but a page on Facebook called Bruce Williams Photography. And I'm going to make a bit of an effort to start putting more photography-related stuff on there and building up a little bit of a profile. So if you're interested, feel free to check it out and click on the little button that says like. All right, that'll do it. Shameless plug over, and we'll talk to you soon. See ya.
Shutters Inc. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.